Welcome to the Working Genius Podcast, where we discuss anything and everything related to the six types of working genius and how it impacts your work and your life. I'm Patrick Lencioni. I'm your host today, joined by the squad, Cody Thompson.
Hey, Pat.
How you doing?
Good.
Good, good. Not great, because we're not using that word. Tracy, how are you doing today?
I am awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Good word. And we have Matt, who is not only our engineer today, but he's a guest on our show. Hi, Matt.
Hi there.
And Liam. How you doing, Liam?
Hello, everyone.
We got a first time on. So today we're going to talk about what, Cody?
Entering the workforce.
Yes, how working genius helps us make that entry into the workforce. Now, for those people that entered the workforce years ago, this is still going to be interesting because it has to do with choosing a job and choosing a career and all those things. But we specifically want to focus on a young person diving into jobs for the first time after college or whatever situation they're in. And that's why we have both Liam and Matt on the mic, because we want to talk to them about their experience, their friends' experience, getting recruited, looking for jobs, and how their understanding of working genius informs some of that stuff right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because like we're coming up on graduation season. You know, that's right. We did a little podcast last week about how what a great gift this would be for grads, but this is the reason, is because we're going to talk about how it could affect the way you look at jobs, what jobs you're interested in, what would fit you, how you're uniquely gifted. And if we could solve that problem, you know, this would be wonderful.
Right. And Tracy, you said something before we started, and that is we don't want to give people the impression that when you're graduating college, or maybe you're graduating high school going into the workforce, or you've decided to do something like that, which is fine. More and more successful people are doing that. That we're not trying to say you should have the perfect job. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to get this, you know, you need to have the perfect job and you should complain if you ever have to do anything you don't like to do. Hey, learning by doing hard things is wonderful. Mm-hmm. So this is not one of these Pollyanna-ish entitlement things where never do, if your boss asks you to do something, say, well, that's not my working genius. It's like tough luck. But what we are trying to say is if you don't know what your gifts are, you might very well be walking into a job that not only are you not going to like, you're not going to succeed in, and that there's no real virtue in that. I mean, you can recover from that, and I certainly did, but if you can avoid that, that's actually good.
Right.
Absolutely. And if 80% of your job lives in your working frustrations, stay away from that job. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should not put ourselves in those situations. That's ridiculous.
Well, and I love this context because it really is kind of a crapshoot, because this is the cleanest slate that you're ever going to have is graduating college. Because it's like you might have had an internship here to help you get through college or something like that. But most people feels like the only blank slate you're going to get in your life. And then what happens is without any handles or context for what job or what role should I actually be looking for, we end up doing the thing that our dads always tell us is like, they're offering you a job. Do they have benefits? You should take it.
Exactly.
And then what happens is you get stuck in a job for a long time that was sort of a crapshoot to begin with. And then that's what your resume says for the rest of your career. And it's almost hard to get out.
And before we bring these guys in, it's worthwhile to explain like my experience coming out of college, because I got really good grades because we were pretty poor and I needed to work hard and I get a job. I wasn't going to ask my parents for any more money. And so I did all these interviews and I interviewed with this one company that everybody said, well, if you could get a job there, you're set. Mm-hmm. And I got that job. By the grace of God, I got that job. But the problem was it was exactly the opposite of what I was skilled to do. So I say by the grace of God because it was a fortunate thing that I could make some money. But it was not good for me in terms of my skills. Mm-hmm. And for the same reason that I didn't like mowing the lawn with my dad when I was a kid, because it was actually asking me to do my very working frustrations. And for 2 years, I grinded it out. Now, I can look back and say I learned some valuable lessons, but it was so painful and so confidence crushing. Mm-hmm. It took a while to recover from that. And I don't think anybody needs to walk headlong into an experience like that. And for me, it was everything was doing T work, tenacity, and E work, which was just do whatever somebody asks you to do don't use your discernment, don't invent a new way, don't wonder, don't. It was playing into my greatest weaknesses, and I was not good at it.
And then too many people, too often, they're 2 years they grind that job out, and then their resume says that they're only qualified to do that same job at a different company. And then you, without knowing like, oh, the reason I didn't like that job, I think that's really what it is.
Right.
It's like, I've had multiple jobs in my career. I didn't know why I didn't like some of them until I looked at it in the working genius lens.
Right.
Because I always thought, oh, maybe it's just like my coworkers, or maybe it's this. But when you look back, you know, I even went to a startup and there were four people there. And I was like, why should I not like this job?
Mm-hmm.
And so this gives you handles to go, oh, okay. So I didn't like it for a specific reason. Then I don't just go out and mine all these job sites for another job with no context. I start looking for the job that might fit my
task ability. Yeah. The first job I got was at a management consulting firm. Well, I'm a management consultant now, but the job they were hiring for wasn't to be a management consultant. It was to be a quant jock, to sit there and quantify numbers and make slides and graphs and everything else. And so I suffered for 2 years thinking, but this should have been great. And the partner on my case, she said, you'd be a great partner here, Pat. You really would. You get what we do. But that's not what we need right now. And you're going to have to suffer for 5 more years before we let you do that. You should probably leave.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God I did, because I finally got to do some of the things I love to do. So the title of the job isn't always right. The industry isn't always right. You got to get down to the tasks.
Yeah. You know, the other thing we should say up front is that, and somebody pointed this out, we had talked on a previous podcast about, hey, every job should have a 2-letter code on it. And even that was a little too idealistic, because the truth is that every job is a 6-letter job. And when we say 6 letters, like the WIDGET, that represents all the activities of work, and every job you do all 6.
Yes.
Now, but what the important piece is you should know the order of those 6 letters for every job.
You know, something just occurred to me, and Matt and Liam, I'm going to ask you this too, is I almost think it's more important to understand your working frustrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can't get the perfect job, but you can avoid getting the perfectly miserable job.
That's right.
So let's talk to you guys about, Matt, what are your working frustrations? Which 2 letters are the ones that if you had to go to work every day and do that, it would just crush you?
Tenacity and invention.
Tenacity and invention.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, Matt, if you had to be like a solopreneur, come up with a brand new idea and do everything, pack the boxes, market it all by yourself, like my friend John, who does that at home. In fact, those are, I think, his 2 geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
How fun would that be for you?
Well, I took entrepreneurship in college as a minor. And in the very last class, the teacher asked, so how many of you want to start your own company? And the majority of the class didn't raise their hands, but I was one of the people with my hand down.
Damn, you were like, yeah. Absolutely not.
All they talked about was coming up with the idea and then all the details and execution, and it sounded horrible.
And yet, entrepreneurship sounds so cool.
Yeah, very sexy.
Probably that's why you picked it as a minor, right? Entrepreneurship, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
But the good news is you came to realize that's not what I want to do, and now you know why.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know why. Liam, what are your working frustrations?
My working frustrations are WI, and it's funny, we were in a meeting, I think, talking about our services industry of the company, and you asked me to come up, or you asked the team to come up with a metaphor, and I was like, I'm not an inventor. There is no shot I'm going to be able to do that. So I referred right back to you.
And what a great thing that we can go, oh yeah, that's not my thing.
Right. Because I would be, oh, why can Cody and Pat come up with the best metaphors? And I have nothing going on there, but now I understand.
Right. So if somebody said to you, hey, we have a job for you, Liam, we want you to think about things, have deep thoughts and come up with new ideas. And Matt, we want you to come up with new ideas and then implement them on your own. That would be horrible. Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, most jobs start, Tracy, a lot of jobs for people entering the workforce are tapping the witch thing.
I would say they're probably ET jobs.
Right.
Most of us start our careers kind of in that category, unless you're in sales, maybe. Yeah.
Right. Enablement, be helpful, do whatever we ask
and
you.
Tenacity.
And just get it done.
Get stuff done.
Grind it out. Mm-hmm. So we tend to start there because companies have a lot more roles in that area.
That's right.
Those are my working frustrations, and yours too, Cody.
Mm-hmm.
So we were kind of screwed coming out of that college.
The truth is I actually thought, well, you know what? I might not be good at work. You know, like early on in my career, I was like, I guess I just am not good at this, and everybody else is good. Yeah, I have a defect. It goes without saying, but it's worth repeating, which all of these are critical. It's not like when you say that the majority of the jobs coming out of college are ET jobs, it doesn't mean then you get to graduate to the IW job.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's not the point. The point is actually probably the way we've talked about it is companies spend increasingly more time as you go down from, you can spend very little time wondering and a lot of time teeing by the time you get down to tenacity. So it makes sense that the majority of jobs that are out there are actually ET jobs because mm-hmm. we spend the most of our time doing that.
And boys, let me ask you this question. Boys, you're young men. But think about this.
All of us are young. Me and these boys. You know, yeah.
which majors and which kids in college had the easiest time finding jobs? Like, if you majored in this, it was probably easier to find a job. They recruit for that. There's a lot of jobs in that area.
I actually don't even know.
I would say maybe marketing. It seems like marketing is always the...
Finance and accounting, probably.
Finance and accounting.
They're like, is there a right answer here?
Think about all of your friends yeah. that did finance and accounting, because there's a ton of that. And with their, and you have one of your friends, Joey, and he is just grinding, mm-hmm. right? Because they can take somebody that's pretty new to that and go, we got a lot of work for you to do. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the beauty of that. If you're an ET, congratulations.
That's right.
It is not going to be hard for you to, one, find a job and a job that actually suits your skill set, right? The other one is engineering. A lot of people go, I should be an engineer. I think my dad would have had me be an engineer with a finance minor because he knew that there's a lot of jobs in that area, and that would have crushed me. But so those are the kind of things that lend themselves to first years coming out of school. Your son had two That's great right. job offers. He's an engineer.
That's right. And he actually selected his final job that he selected. Actually, his working genius informed that. So he had an opportunity with a big company, and then he had an opportunity with a small company. And the small company allowed him for more invention. He's an IT. So he decided to go to this company for a variety of reasons, but the IT thing was a big part of that.
Isn't that crazy? We're sitting here talking about it, and Harrison, your son, took a job so he could do IT stuff, and it would be your nightmare job.
Nightmare, oh, yeah. I know.
I love that. You can know these people, and they can seem all similar, and then you break this down, and they have these amazing... I talked to a guy in my kitchen the other night, a friend of yours, was at our house, Alex. Mm-hmm. And he has been playing video games for the last 3 months because he's not sure what he wants to do. And so I said, get your phone out, take this thing. And 10 minutes later, he had results. And I guessed them because I know this young man. And I said, hey, whatever job you get, make sure that you get to use this and this. Mm-hmm. And don't take a job that's going to primarily do that. And he goes, well, that's exactly what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it literally in 15 minutes, it can give you insights.
Well, I loved just last week, Pat, you and I were doing some stuff around Working Genius with a group of like 30 people. And one of the guys shared a story where his son was in the middle of finishing his
third year of nursing school.
And he had his son take this. And it turns out that like all the things that he knew he was going to end up doing as a nurse were his frustrations. It was enablement and a few other things that would suit that role really well. And the guy kind of tongue in cheek was like, it was great for my son because he decided to change his major 3 years in.
And he was grumpy. I mean, he was frustrated and now he feels liberated.
Mm-hmm.
But
bad for his pocketbook. Yeah.
Thanks, Pat. I just invested 2.5 years in nursing school for my son, and now he's doing something else. And yet
that's worth every penny.
Like tears in his eyes. He said, but that gave my son the clarity to pursue what God meant him to do.
And I love, you're totally right that maybe this conversation is mostly about your working frustrations to go. Cause the last thing, I have two little kids and when they get jobs, like the last thing I would want for them is to go to work and for them to be miserable.
Yeah.
Now, I want them to go and do hard things and go and have to stretch themselves out of the box of like what they think that they're, you know, uniquely equipped to do. But it going to work, and I know you know this, like you don't want your kids to go to work and be miserable.
Oh, that's hard.
At least working competency and above would be fantastic.
You know what's interesting? You mentioned this about parents. So Liam, you're 22 years old.
Yeah.
Many times since you've worked here, which has only been like 9 months, but it's like 9 years of off his career life because we've done so much work. But you always talk about your parents' view of what you do.
Yes. Well, first and foremost, my dad is a DT, right? So he would always get stuff done. He would decide things and get stuff done. But I always noticed that I was always forced to do things. You know, he never had the genius of galvanizing me around it. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll just do it. But what I've come to understand is it's so much easier if you actually galvanize people around
something. Because that's the next stage in the process.
Right. Yeah. And what I would always do when I would, you know, try and plan something for my buddies, I would say, hey guys, can we do this? But we never discerned it together. And I would just try and galvanize it. And it was so frustrating for me. But now I understand that, okay, we have to discern it together and make sure it's the right thing to do. So it's a lot easier to galvanize.
That's neat. And now, how do your parents feel about what you're doing now?
They love it. because yeah, it's awesome.
And the key is because Liam has a job where he is using his geniuses. And I've talked to his parents a few times, and I know they were like worried about you, as right. we all are. So it's so many people listening to this might actually be parents of somebody going into the workforce, and you're just thinking, oh God, help them do something that taps into the gifts you gave them and that they don't become miserable at. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because one of the ways we talk about hiring is like, I had mentioned this to a friend of mine recently. I said, we hire people and then we figure out people who are fit our culture, and then we figure out how to best leverage their talents. Now, that sounds like Disneyland, because that's not how most companies hire. But what they're trying to do is exactly that. When they write here's what the job requirements are, and they're trying to match up like, oh, a person that has this skill set that would add to our team. And this is sort of the missing piece behind all of that, which is, hey, if you have X amount of years in engineering that's what we need, but here's what you actually are going to do on the team. And, right. and it's, what's great is a lot of things try to solve that because it's best for the employee, best for the college grad, best for the person that's getting the job, and best for the employer. Mm-hmm. But until now, we've just not had that ability to match that up that way.
Exactly. Hey, Matt, how does your dad feel about your job?
Depends on the day, right, Matt? No.
Yeah.
So, Liam and Matt, tell me, so you have both, we're in a fraternity together. I know a lot of your friends. What are they doing, and how do you see their job satisfaction relative to their working genius?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually wanted to talk about this because, you know, I think the one piece of advice that I would give to people coming out of college is, you know, you don't have to work for the big company. Because people are going to ask you coming out of college, hey, where are you working in? You want to say Tesla, you want to say Salesforce, you want to say the big companies. And that's, while that's great, that's not necessarily important, because you want to be able to work in your working geniuses. And, you know, we have a friend who, I believe he's a WI, and he's working for a huge sales tech company, and he hates it because he's always doing ET work. And we went out to lunch one day, and he goes, you know, I think I want to start my own company. I'm like, you should do that. You're an inventor. You will right. love that. So it just shows how important it is to work in your working geniuses versus having to ET with a huge name brand company.
You know what the irony is about a big company? Like, you guys came to work here. We have, you know, a dozen people in our headquarters here. When you work at a big company, you get siloed a lot. You're like, mm-hmm. here's a right. job. We have a million of you and you just do this. When you work in a small organization, they need you to do all kinds of things, which allows you more variety, and you can probably find things that match your genius. What about you, Matt? What do you know, think about the jobs that your friends have coming out of school, and how working genius kind of informs this?
Well, like Tracy said, a lot of heavy on ET. A lot of my friends are doing just the same thing over and over again, ET, regardless of what their working geniuses are. But I thought it was interesting what you just said about small companies, that it actually might be more difficult to do all those things without the working genius kind of informing what you're doing in those, right. those companies. So like, yes, you might be doing a lot more, but you're doing what you actually get fulfilled by and what gives you energy.
Right. You know, it really depends on who you are, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. We've told this story before, but when you two came on, you were the first young people we hired out of college, right? We'd never done that before. And so we hired you in, like, we decided, yeah, you guys should work here in January or February. And then you came and started in July. And like 2 weeks before that, we discovered this model, thanks be to God. And so the first thing we did is we thought you were going to be working on certain projects. And then we had you do the assessment and staffed you on things completely different than we would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. And though you guys are wonderful people, I think that your success level would have been very different had we just randomly thrown you onto projects based on need.
Well, and honestly, I could have seen us making a decision completely differently for all good intention, you know, yeah. all good reasons. Like, if in a vacuum, we might have said, like, maybe it's not a good idea to put, you know, Matt Lincioni on the project that you're working on right now, just by way of like, oh, right out of the gate, maybe he shouldn't be on the team with his dad. Well, right. you know, like, we could have easily justified making that decision, go like, well, why don't we put Liam over there? And it would have been, we say, this is not like marketing, it would have been really detrimental to our mm-hmm. team to have yep. done it that way.
Not to mention to their satisfaction, but just to the work. We are getting exponentially more work out of these guys who are pretty worthless, right? I mean, you're just a young guy. Because we know what they're great at.
Yeah.
And now when they struggle at something and we can explain it, we can go, okay, you're going to need to override that sometimes, but we're not going to make you do it every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth saying too, is even though the context of this is like, okay, if you're graduating, you should know this so that you are analyzing the jobs that you're about to get a little differently. But if you've already taken a job, it's still worth going in and going, hey, you know, I just learned this about myself. And here's the things that I'm fulfilled by. Like, these are the things that make me bounce off the walls. If I'm given a chance to participate in the brainstorming side of this, even I know that I'm, you know, young or maybe I haven't cut my teeth yet in this industry or whatever it is, but just going to your manager and make, or your teammate or someone and saying, hey, this stuff actually makes me, brings light to my eyes. And I think I would really enjoy that. That can make the difference too. I look back and I go, if I had just had this language at some of those jobs where I was dissatisfied, if I had just said, hey, I'd love to do some of this, they would have been like, oh yeah, let's, there's room. There's a little margin for that.
Yeah. Even relatively poor managers, if they understand this, they still want their people to be productive and get more done. Mm-hmm. And at your company where there was just four or five of you sitting around that table, had you had this language, even the manager you had that wasn't all that interested in your well-being would have thought, well, if I can sell more of this product and this company can be more successful, I should let you do that. Mm-hmm. It's not just about altruism. It's actually, it's pretty practical and self-centered for a leader to want their people to do what they're great at.
It just so happens it's like a have your cake and eat it too situation. Like, who doesn't want their employees to live in and be doing the thing that they want to do because it serves the business better, you know?
Exactly. Hey, I have a question for you guys. Of all of your friends, and you guys are very social and you live near a bunch of your friends, how many of them are, they've been working for like 8-9 months. How many of them are like, oh yeah, I'm going to stay here for a while? Or how many of them are already looking for their next thing?
Kind of neither.
What do you mean? How can it be neither?
Because they're settled in. They're doing their job. I think they still probably have the same mindset that you had. They're glad to have a job.
So they're just grinding it out.
Yeah.
Oh, so they're like, I'm going to stay here.
There's a handful that actually
stay there, not because they're fulfilled, but because they have something.
Exactly. You
know, in a way, it was probably hard to get a job in the midst of that, like this year.
Yeah.
You know what is funny, and it's like there's positives to that in terms of appreciating that. The negative can be if they get used to the fact that, oh, well, work isn't all that fulfilling anyway.
Right. And I think a lot of people coming out of college is that's what they think work is. They get comfortable and they don't think there's any room. They don't think there's any outlet for their working genius.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how now you guys are very satisfied in your job. You've told us that I'm not like, you don't have to say, yes, we are very satisfied, Mr. Lencioni. But the thing is, I know you are because you're using your skills and you're killing it and you guys are having fun. Right. When you talk to your friends about how you're using your working genius, what is that like?
I mean, I get pushback with my friends just because at least from their perspective, it wouldn't be possible. Their job, like you said, is very siloed.
Very narrow.
They have a very well-defined job with hard limits on what they do. So even when I present the model to them and like the whole power of it and everything, it's kind of, well, yeah, that's great, but my job is my job and I don't know how to make it.
Do you guys have to kind of tone it down then? Kind of talking about your work?
Yeah, I actually do. I think we do tone it down a little bit because, you know, there's not a lot of companies that a 22-year-old can try and galvanize a 40, 50-year-old woman around getting into a meeting. And it just sounds, I know we've probably talked about it before, it sounds weird.
Right.
It's like, it's almost like they're not even going to believe it. So I'm not going to talk with them about it.
So maybe when they're in that place where they're finally deciding it's time to get out, one of the things you guys can do for them is say, know who you are, know what's out there and find a good match.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it actually is a lot more effective when we talk to them about the frustrations. Like you said, when we tell them, hey, you probably don't want a job that involves this stuff. And they're like, you're right. I think I would hate that.
So. Right. Working genius is more about the ideal. Mm-hmm. Although, and when you're a company has a lot of vested interest in helping their people find the ideal job. Mm-hmm. But when you're getting out of school or you're young, probably avoiding the things that are in your working frustration is a better place to start. All right. Now we're going to do a commercial. We like to do these unpaid commercials for products or ideas that we just like a lot. And Tracy, what are we doing a commercial for today?
So we are doing a commercial for the book, What Color Is Your Parachute?
Is your parachute, not my parachute. What color is your parachute?
That's right.
You know, this is a book that my mom gave me when I was 16. I promptly put it on the shelf in my bedroom and said, I'm not going to do that. And then probably 6 years later, I did it when I left a job and I was in transition. And it is a lot of work, but it was really great to think back about my childhood and figure out what my favorite things were. So while the working genius, we certainly recommend doing that. If you really want to go deep, deep, deep and understand who you are and what you've done throughout your life, I love this book. And the even best part of that is Dr. Richard Bowles, who wrote this, who since passed away, God bless him. I got to know him. He's from the Bay Area and I met his son. And then I got to know him and talked to him about the book and what it was about and how he wrote it. this book also, people that might not realize, outside of the Bible, it's one of the best-selling books of all books.
Wow.
Wow.
And I know it's been around forever.
There's a lot of books. So
that's a lot of books. And I mean, yeah, hundreds of millions of copies of this book, I think, have sold. And because it's been around forever, and it's just a really great way, if you have time to really go deep, to understand, you know, who you are and what you love. And so that's it for today's version of the Working Genius Podcast. I want to thank Matt and Liam for joining us. Now that's your break. Scurry back to work. You've got a lot of work to do, but thanks for being here, you guys. We appreciate it. We love talking to you out there, the audience. And so we'll look forward to our next version of the Working Genius Podcast. God bless.